Our next speaker is Joel Mocher. Joel is a professor at Northwestern in both economics and history. Go ahead, Joel.
Thank you. I want to take a much more of a longer view of this event and go back to what William McNeil, who was a great historian at the University of Chicago, pointed out many years ago, and that is we can really look at history as a long struggle of people versus microbes and viruses, and that this has been a continuous war that has started from the very beginning of mankind and probably before, and that every once in a while a big pandemic really changes the course of history. Ed already mentioned the Justinian plague, but in fact the decline and fall of the Roman Empire is often bookmarked, between the so-called Antonine Plague, which started in about the 2nd century A.D., and that the Justinian Plague was just a sort of ultimate failure and of the Roman Empire to stay together. But the Middle Ages itself, of course, are, bookmarked by the famous Black Death, which is probably the mother of all pandemics. And we should, of course, not forget that much of the pre-Columbian population of America was destroyed by a wave of pandemics that Europeans brought with them, to which they themselves had become partially immune, such as smallpox and measles, and essentially wiped out much of the original population of the continent. And so, very often pandemics change history, and the question is, does history also change pandemics? And so to what extent had these pandemics changed as a result of economic development? And sort of here there's sort of bad news and good news to some extent. The bad news is that because the world has become much more integrated, I don't like to use the word globalization, but maybe here it's appropriate, that means that microorganisms get around the world much faster than they used to be. All of the previous pandemics, as far as we can tell, have been the result of contact between societies that previously were not in contact. Of course, the Great Columbian Exchange is the biggest example of that, but others as well. And of course, now when a pandemic breaks out in one place, it spreads practically simultaneously to the rest of the world. And that's what we've seen in the last 3 months, because 3 months is, of course, a very short time. I mean, you look at pandemics in the past. And so the more integrated we are, the more globalized we are, the more likely that any outbreak of an pandemic in one place is going to affect the world as a whole and expose previously unexposed populations. The other thing, of course, is that viruses and microbes keep mutating, and perhaps the rate of mutation has accelerated. There are some people who believe that. I'm not actually sure, but what is clear is that they are getting immune to things that we throw at them, and so we have to keep working it. The good news, of course, is that in the past century, we are continuously learning, finally, what it is that's hitting us. And in that sense, this pandemic is very, very different, even from the Spanish flu that people talked about. In 1918, people had no clue what it was that hit them. In fact, the realization that this was a virus wasn't actually made until 1933, 15 years after it broke out. They didn't know. And, we have gotten so good at controlling infectious disease that this pandemic has hit us, with surprise. Remember that in the U.S. at the beginning of the 20th century, the mortality rate from infectious disease, including both viral and bacterial diseases, to be sure, fell from 800 to 60 per 100,000 people. That is a decline of 92%. In our world, until February, infectious disease was an also-ran in terms of what's killing us. Now it's back. We don't know how big it's going to be. But it's not the same. And generalizing from history would be extremely dangerous here, because we are, despite all the problems, despite difficult transition dynamics that we're facing, we are better equipped to deal with this than anybody has ever been before. And what we're throwing at this virus, you know, it will take a little while until we find a vaccine, but nobody really has any doubt that within a year, 18 months, people bandy around these numbers, we will have something. And what's more, the techniques that we develop to fight this virus will stand us in good service when the next one hits. And so the good news is that in the very long run, in the war between people and microorganisms, we're winning. But this is a rear-end battle, and it may be a bloody one. It may be last a few years. It will cause a great deal of damage to the economy. But this isn't going to be the Black Death or the Justinian Plague or anything like that. We have molecular virology, we have computational genomics, we have cellular immunology, we have advanced models of epidemiologies, which we can throw at this. Remember, we had the damn virus's gene sequenced within a few weeks after it came out. We know who the enemy is, and that puts us at a huge advantage compared to the poor people who were struggling with the Black Death and never knew what hit them. And so, and in the long run, there may be at least two or three good results from this, apart from the fact that we're learning a lot more about how to deal with viruses. One is that we may get better at working from a distance, and that this will enhance telework finally. And the second thing that this hopefully once the vaccine is found, that this will put an end to the miserable anti-vaccine movement which refuses to go away. But it isn't
Joel,
going to be the Black Death.
Joel, it was great to hear that sort of historical optimism.